I'm Captain Kevin Smith, and this is Throttle Up, a radio show and podcast dedicated to the proposition that critical thinking, when employed, can dramatically improve performance in whatever we are doing, enable us to solve problems that others avoid, equip us to become thought leaders instead of followers, and provide us with the intellectual resources and moral courage to support and defend America and its Constitution. Our motto is clarify, reason, win. That is, clarify the actual, employ analytic reason, and achieve mission success. Our website, throttleupradio.com, that has all kinds of information. Also, our podcast is located there, as well as iTunes. And of course, we have a blog, so please visit our website. Our support staff, Evergroove Studios for audio engineering services. They are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and Reflections Printing for multimedia support, and they are located in St. George, Utah. Our book is Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. It is available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. Our broadcast time on Red State Talk Radio, we are on the weekends, both Saturday and Sunday, on the main channel, that's at 7 p.m., and the Encore channel, that's at 6 p.m. Okay, welcome back to another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. And now we are approaching the 4th of July, the celebration of our Declaration of Independence, Independence Day. And that's coming up this weekend, actually this Saturday. And so I wanted to spend a little bit of time thinking about and talking about this event in the course of human affairs and what it signified, and try to, spend a little quality time on it. I think we all pretty much recognize what it is and how it was one of the founding documents for this great nation of ours, which of course is unique in the world. And so we'll start off with a discussion of the Declaration of Independence. July 4th, 1776 is the date on the document. So we'll start off with that, and then we'll kind of move into a logical place for us to also go. And that happens to be a key aspect of critical thinking. And that is, how can we, in the terms of the people that have put this idea together, how can we learn to discern in terms of what are we being told? What are we being expected to believe? And is that useful? Is it truthful? Is it practical? Is it operational in terms of, will it be helpful in my life, in the life of my family, my organization, community, and country? Is it viable, if you will? So that's going to be the second part of the show. We'll get into that. We did touch on that last week. I wanted to continue with this because it is, you know, frankly, it is, you know, a big part of what we do here on Throttle Up Radio and podcast and other things that we are involved in. It is something that is important for all of us, and it really is justifies what we try to do here in terms of being helpful for the listening audience across the board in trying to understand what is going on, trying to understand how we can think, what is the best way for us to think about these kinds of things. You know, and I've often said this, and I guess it bears a repeating, particularly because of something that has just occurred. We'll discuss this a bit later. But what we should be always, let's say, conscious of is how to think rather than what to think. And that's pretty much the key to what we are trying to accomplish here in our ongoing efforts in this area that we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. That is what Throttle Up Radio and Throttle Up Podcast, that is what the Throttle Up Initiative is all about, is to improve our ability to think or to enable us to think critically and to find solutions to complex problems. Okay. Now, we're gonna spend a little bit of quality time here celebrating this great country. There's been a lot of negativity out there. There's a lot of accusations being thrown about in terms of systemic racism, whatever that means, white privilege, slavery, and Black Lives Matter, and all kinds of things are being thrown about in this summer of turmoil and social and cultural instability. So We're going to hit the pause button here on all of that stuff, and we're going to look at this country. We're going to consider it from its origination, and how did it come about? And that's key here, not what happened, but how is it that the United States of America actually emerged? Why did it emerge? How did it come about? So we'll begin, and we may expand on this. You know, I'm always thinking of innovative ways in terms of harnessing innovation and creativity, how to present meaningful content in what I do. Okay, the Declaration of Independence. Going to read some of this. We're going to consider some of it as we begin this show. The unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect for the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the cause which impel them to the separation. Okay, so that's the opening paragraph. Here we have evoking a higher order of causation, if you will, or a higher order of authority. There is a higher authority here than that transcends a particular state or a country. What is the higher authority? A higher authority has to do with universal morality, if you will, or the fundamental principles by which human beings can organize themselves in a productive and mutually beneficial way. Now, that's particularly important because I said mutually beneficial way, not to benefit the hierarchy, not to benefit the monarchy, not to benefit exclusively the privileged elite, but to benefit everyone. Now, I'm not at all suggesting here that we even consider what is being thrown about today in terms of socialism. I'm not talking about that. I'm not suggesting that in any way, shape, or form. We'll talk about that later. Denise D'Souza has a new book out, which we will be discussing in future shows. And he also has a movie coming out. I think it's opening on August 7th. So I'm not talking about that. But I am talking about a higher authority beyond the state. Second paragraph. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are initiated among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Now, that happens to be a particularly important principle here that was not normally used. I think we can go back to the Magna Carta and see that that's where this idea originated, but it was kind of a new idea in the course of human events. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. I lost my line. Something happened to my computer, and I'm trying to relocate my line here. Okay, let me start again here. Sorry. Prudence indeed dictates that governments long established shall not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object invents a design to reduce them under absolute despotism. It is their right, their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former system of government. The history of the present King of Britain, Great Britain, is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. And then, of course, there is a whole list of grievances that are presented. Let me pause here for a moment and consider what these paragraphs mean, and how is it that they came about in such a fashion. And they caught hold. They didn't wither on the vine. They weren't just momentarily popular. They had an enduring value. And one of the things that, you know, that I consider in terms of how this came about, two things converged, I believe, that enabled, that were the, you know, maybe I could say primary enablers. The two things converged. Number one is that there was the intellectual depth. The argument was not superficial, but it was intellectually deep and rigorous. It was a fairly rigorous argument being put forward. It evoked and referenced and identified certain things, and it also asserted that there are certain truths that we ought to all recognize as being universally true. And it said that these are self-evident, ought to be self-evident to any living human being. Okay, and the other thing that I see is that the authors and the supporters of this document were also courageous. They're very courageous because they were proposing something that was an alternative to the current order. It was an alternative to what was being considered to be oppression. It was, in effect, to change the order of things, to alter and to put in place a more, well, the words that come to my mind is to put in place a more human-friendly system, a human-centric system, or a system that was able to befriend, support, encourage, and mentor all of its citizens, and to throw off the bondage. Now, here you have, in fact, what you have here is you have a tacit understanding that this tyranny was creating de facto servitude in a sense, and that had to be identified and it had to be eliminated, done away with. And so that was the major, I think, the the major points of the of this initiative, which began something that was apparently unique in human history. It began something that was way, way outside the box in terms of what was going on in the world, what had been occurring in the world. It was a brand new idea. So we could say that the United States of America was founded on innovation, or to rephrase it slightly, the founding concepts were innovation and creativity. What is the best way for us that have occupied a new land? What is the best way for us to organize ourselves? What is the best way for us to govern ourselves? Or what is the best governmental system that we can put in place? And the first and foremost, it has to be through the consent of the people. And that's a powerful idea. But it was new. It was not entirely new in terms of some of the preceding stuff. The Magna Carta comes to mind, and all of you that are historians could probably add something to my discussion, even make some corrections. I'm not a professional historian. I am a trained critical thinker and complex problem solver. That's my stock and trade. So there may be some additions or corrections that could be made by those of you who are more familiar with history. But nevertheless, that's what I see, is that this was quite a creative endeavor and very, very innovative. And as it turns out, it wasn't just a fleeting idea. It was an idea that took hold, that found purchase and preserved, had been and has been preserved for 250 years or more, and has demonstrated its value. It actually has worked. It has worked beyond all of our expectations. The document, after the list of grievances, the document goes on to say, in every stage of these oppressions, we have petitions for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. The next paragraph, next to the last paragraph, nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarranted jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. Okay, so they're looking at from a broader perspective, and you know, and here we have a classic example, I think a beautiful example of big picture thinking too. They're taking a global view of this, or a world view, or what I consider to be a big picture view of the situation and circumstances as it is unfolding before their eyes. And they're looking at, okay, if we can establish ourselves as a equal partner, would that not benefit all of us? The last paragraph. We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress, assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the World for the recessitude of our intentions, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, conduct alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of a right do. Okay, so that pretty much ends the document. Again, it is a declaration and a profound assertion of the human rights, of the exercise of the right and privilege that we all have as sovereign beings to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that is our God-given right, and that is something that we need to assert and protect. So, in conclusion, let me just pass along a few things that, you know, that I think about. And, you know, I encourage all of us to think about these things too in your own way. The couple of things here is that our job is to preserve this fundamental idea. It should not be a flash in the pan from a historical standpoint. We need to preserve the system that we have established, in that it supports and enables those three things that we talked about: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We have to have that which we have to have in place, that which will provide each and every one of us with those three things. If others come to the, you know, to the fore and they say, well, we have a better idea, your idea is fundamentally flawed, the whole notion of individual liberty and sovereignty with respect to the individual is not a proper and effective way for humans to organize themselves, we should be able to stand up and we should be able to say, okay, show me your evidence. Here we have clear and present evidence that the focus on these liberties is in fact a very, very productive and useful and effective way to go. Show me the evidence that your system is better, or even just as good. Show me that evidence. As it turns out, there is no compelling evidence that there is something better. And if there is no compelling evidence that there is something better, then why are we not confident and sure of ourselves? Why do we have to question it continuously and say, okay, well, we are confident and we have the self-confidence to assert that this is the best we have come up with? It is not a perfect system, but it is a system that is dynamic and it is adaptive, and it can, in fact, support and nurture and protect and encourage each and every one of us to be the best that we can be. Okay, so let me take a break, and then we will get back to the second phase of our discussion on this show that celebrates the 4th of July. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up. And, of course, 4th of July is this weekend, and I wish you all a happy 4th of July as we press on in our efforts here. All right, so we talked about the Declaration of Independence, and now we're going to be talking about the ideas behind, okay, how do we preserve this? How do we defeat the forces out there that want to destroy this country? And there's a lot of them, lots of attempts over the years. We're currently seeing that growing in magnitude and threat. So we have threats out there, and how do we deal with it? And how do we position ourselves? You notice I'm using how a lot, because it's how do we think? How to think, not what to think, but how do we think about this stuff? There's lots of things that are going on in terms of what is occurring today. The news cycle keeps changing, and it becomes a dizzying proposition to really stay up with everything that's going on, because it all seems to be chaotic. But we need to step back and ask ourselves, how should we think about such things? And we touched on this last week, which is this effort that is called Learn to Discern. And it has to do with citizen media literacy. Now, this effort, it's actually ongoing, and there is a Great Courses program that you can purchase. I have it in my library, and I would recommend it. I've got a lot of Great Courses programs about various subjects. Some of them are fun things. Others are a little bit more technical and professional. Nevertheless, there's good stuff, and this thing is fairly new. I would encourage all of us to purchase and to review this instructional video. It's really quite good, and it's appropriate for the time. So, Learn to Discern, from an organization called IREX. IREX.org is their website, and this is important because there's an ongoing effort, whether you know it or not. I believe that there is an ongoing effort afoot to provide us with or to create news, if you will, or information through the major media channels or major media outlets. But there's a concerted effort to present us with information that is deceptive, to present us with information that is simply not true, but if it is believed, then it supports a particular hidden agenda. And that's been going on full blast here ever since President Trump got elected. And so we kind of need to fight back against this instead of just being passive and shrug our shoulders and wonder if it's true. We kind of need to fight back, because a lot of this stuff is simply made up. Now, we talked about the seven items last week. We talked about those seven items that constitute fake news, that constitute stuff that is manipulative, that is designed to deceive, designed to encourage one to believe something that simply is not true. And this is ongoing. And so this is a great opportunity for us to say, okay, what can we do? We are privileged to live in this great country of ours, but what is our responsibility? Are we just going to be passive citizens, or are we going to at least inform ourselves of what is actually the truth? In the terms that I use in my Critical Thinking Essentials handbook is clarify the actual. What is actually going on, and can we clearly understand what is actually going on? Again, clarify the actual. That is so vitally important for all of us critical thinkers. We have to be able to clarify the actual with respect to any meaningful occurrence in our lives. We're not talking about trivial stuff. We're talking about things that are meaningful, things that are useful, things that are viable. And so that's where we are. All right, so I'm going to play this audio clip, and this has to do with this whole issue of learn to discern in terms of what is actually going on in the media.
Most people really can't tell fake from real.
Fabricated stories.
The fake news phenomenon has hit Kenya. Fake news about Qatar.
Flood Germany with disinformation and fake news.
Russian propaganda.
Fake news.
Censorship.
Manipulating.
Fake news.
Disinformation hurts and compromises democracy because it pollutes the information space to such an extent that people can't tell facts and lies apart anymore. That means that they can't have a real deliberative debate about what to do in a country. Because if you can't even agree on the facts, then any kind of debate breaks down. I think in the US that has already started happening, which is incredibly worrying.
Ukraine has much more experience compared to many other countries in how to deal with fakes and disinformation. No other country has a contemporary history of conducting war with Russia.
I learned about the Learn to Discern curriculum when I was looking for solutions to the crisis in Ukraine. Media literacy is a very, very important ingredient, and Learn to Discern was by far and away the most original approach to it that we came across.
So at the beginning of the Learn to Discern project, we looked around for different media literacy trainings. What we found is that the media literacy curriculums weren't addressing the types of challenges that we face today with disinformation and propaganda. They were not as sophisticated as propaganda and disinformation itself. And therefore, we decided that we need to create something new with a fresh start that addresses those specific manipulation tactics.
We need to realize that we are in an information vortex, and these winds can have a negative effect on our minds. My job as a Learn to Discern trainer is to help my students use common sense and critical thinking when working with all these different information streams.
I came here today because I think it's rather important for me to understand the whole truth, what happens in my country now. I'm a psychologist, and during my talking with people, sometimes there are many problems, and most people feel very anxious because they don't know whom they could believe.
It was interesting to see how the training was organized, learn about new tools, and refresh my skills. Most of all, I liked the first part, when we learned to differentiate news from propaganda. This will make me work more efficiently and find real news and information and distinguish it from the fake ones.
It was a revolutionary and extremely ambitious project. In a very short period of time, a breakthrough in the field of media literacy was made. More than 15,000 opinion leaders, people from the East and South, have received critical thinking skills.
And you'd think, for example, that, you know, Ukraine has this proximity to Russia, has had this longstanding relationship with Russia, and that these sort of lessons that we saw achieved through the IREX program, that it'd be only relevant in Ukraine. And in fact, what we've seen is the complete opposite, particularly over the past couple of years in the West. And so that is why the skills, citizen media literacy, these skills are critical, not just here in Ukraine, but in many countries, including in the West.
So what I really liked about Learn to Discern was the fact that it broke down the audience into different categories. Because as much as we have to be media literate, we have to be audience literate. We have to understand how people consume information, why they consume information, what their social context is.
Together with Expert, we created different types of profiles of people who would come to our trainings, starting from students, continuing with bank workers, activists, and even pensioners, all types of people. And we created for each person some kind of profile. What are their interests, what they like, what kind of information they need to know, and what are their typical sources of information.
I learned how people who create disinformation use fake photos and write headlines with lies. Anyone who reads or watches news needs to know what's true. This knowledge will help me personally and professionally.
I learned new things about how information is manipulated. I plan to share this on Facebook, and I'd like to see more things like this that help fight manipulation.
I think
it's very important to understand that the way our minds work, just by their very nature, they're very susceptible to manipulation. And it really doesn't matter how clever or smart you think you are. We all tend towards what's known as confirmation bias. We all tend to cherry pick information which makes us feel good and that we want to hear.
It can be very difficult to distinguish lies from the truth, because lies are often based on the truth. So we take a close look at that, and we use compelling visuals to help participants absorb information better.
And all the studies have shown it really doesn't matter whether you're a PhD grad or somebody working class with no higher education, you can be just as susceptible.
When we look at the answers together, everything becomes clear, and participants wonder how they didn't see it at first.
By teaching people the skills on how to tell what's true, what's not in the media, and how to discern disinformation, misinformation, and propaganda, we create bigger demand for good quality information. And that's why we focused on people who actually consume the news.
So I think the Learn to Discern strategy is really what makes it special. By targeting the people that it trains, the idea is that they then go and spread these ideas to the people around them, thus creating a space where critical thinking is nurtured and media is engaged with in more sophisticated ways. That methodology is as true for Ukraine as it is for Mexico or for the US.
Most of the people who participated in the training were teachers because they understood the importance of this work, and they're the direct links to parents, students, and colleagues. It is a very big responsibility to open people's eyes and teach what to do with the truth. I believe that we have a unique opportunity to provide our children with practical media orientation skills and critical understanding of information. I am conducting this course for my son at home, and when we watch TV, he can now clearly see where the lies are. Everything is learned during school years, and if we can teach a child, it will reduce the risk that later in life, people will be subjected to manipulation.
The thing that I remember the most from this training was these leaflets, these pamphlets, which I took home, and we were discussing in my family these problems, and it was very It was very useful, not for only for me, but also for my family and for my friends.
From our evaluation forms, from participants, we calculated that each participant, in average, they shared with six other people this information which they received during the training. It means that they were not only received knowledge, but they also were motivated to share this information.
I was thinking, what is the best way to test our materials? And I sent some handouts to my grandma, my babushka. In 1 week, she called me and said, Marina, now I understood why a lot of Ukrainian channels shows good news about Ukrainian oligarch, because they are actually owners of these channels. And I was like, yes, it works.
And I think it's highly applicable in the region, and it also could be applicable to other countries. Because it is not about telling people what to watch, telling them how to select their source of information. It's not about being pro-EU or pro-Russia in Ukraine. It's not about being Republican or Democrat in America. It's about making up your own mind about what you read and see and hear.
And you notice that they talked quite a bit about critical thinking. And so, you know, I thought that, okay, we all know, or we all think we know what it takes to be a critical thinker. What is it that is contained within the concepts of a thing called critical thinking? Okay. And I think that from time to time, we kind of need to go back and check ourselves, check our thinking about critical thinking. Is it what we think it is? Do I have it understood in a way that I can employ it that is useful and productive and not be of a little value? So this is another kind of like a review. So here's a review. This is another version of what critical thinking is all about. I find all of these to be useful. I don't necessarily subscribe to all of them. I think their attempts are noteworthy. I think their attempts should be commended, because it is an attempt to figure out how we should think. All right, so here is one. Here's another short explanation of critical thinking.
Give someone a fish and they'll eat that day. Teach them how to catch a fish and they'll never go hungry. Proverbs like this remind us how learning skills helps to move us towards self-reliance. This is never more true than with critical thinking. Memorize the solution to a problem and you may master that particular problem. Improve your critical thinking and you'll give yourself the tools to create your own effective solutions to a multitude of unfamiliar problems. Critical thinking refers to a diverse range of intellectual skills and activities concerned with evaluating information as well as our own thought in a disciplined way. When we're willing and able to examine our own capability as thinkers, acknowledging problems and weaknesses, this can help us refine our thought processes so that we learn to think and assess information in a more comprehensive way that increases our ability to identify and reject false ideas and ideologies. Critical thinking isn't just thinking a lot. A person may spend a great deal of intellectual energy defending a flawed position or pursuing a question that actually needs reformulating before progress can begin. If they never examine possible flaws and biases behind their approach, that's not thinking critically. We must want to be better at thinking, to pinpoint and minimize any biasing influence on our thought from culture and upbringing, to seek out and be guided by knowledge and evidence that fits with reality, even if it refutes our cherished beliefs. Indeed, when we think critically, beliefs tend not to be cherished, but held on the understanding that if they're shown to be unfounded, a change of position is the most appropriate response. Critical thinkers cultivate an attitude of curiosity and eagerness to widen their perspective and broaden their knowledge, and they're willing to do the work required to keep themselves properly informed about a subject. they recognize that explanations must actually explain and be testable to be worthy of serious consideration, and that legitimate theories clearly define the circumstances in which they'll concede defeat. Critical thinking embraces skepticism. Skepticism doesn't mean an indiscriminate rejection of ideas, as some mistakenly believe. It refers to doubting and suspending our judgment about claims with which we're presented, so that we don't simply accept claims which might be unjustified, but first take the time to understand them, examining the reasoning and possible assumptions and biases behind them. Reasoning behind factual claims should be based in sound, consistent logic, not on emotions and social pressure, because the truth value of factual claims isn't determined by the emotion that accompanies them, or the fact that they may be believed by certain social groups. Sometimes people try to persuade us that reason has no value, but that's an untenable position. Arguing against reason is cutting off the branch on which you sit, using the very thing you're dismissing in order to construct a case against it. Reason has an intrinsic role in the decisions and judgments we make as we negotiate our way through life, whether they be momentous or trivial. If a particular line of reasoning is flawed, what will increase our understanding? Dismissing the value of reason or looking honestly at the flaws? A lack of respect for reason or evidence, or any number of obstructive character traits, will sabotage one's capacity for critical thought. One of the biggest barriers to critical thinking is an unwillingness to see complex issues in anything other than black and white terms. If one sees only two options when more exist, this constitutes a false dichotomy. Consciousness is often presented as something that's either an eternal immaterial entity or reducible and identical to brain states, when in fact there are various other positions. Many divide people into those who accept evolution and those who believe in specific gods, when these categories are not mutually exclusive. If we think in false dichotomies, we'll tend to draw false conclusions. For example, by judging that if option A is false, option B must be true. We may also misrepresent others by wrongly assuming that if they don't hold attitude X, they must hold attitude Y. Black and white thinking often reflects an underlying reluctance or refusal to deal with the uncertainty that results from complexity and an absence of definite answers. But leaping to flawed conclusions because you can't tolerate the ambiguity of not knowing is not about truth or curiosity, but comfort. The critical thinker can handle uncertainty, preferring to be aware of their own areas of ignorance, and they can wait for valid evidence and evidence-based answers. Critical thinking provides each of us with the keys for unlocking our own intellectual independence, leaving us willing and able to explore and solve problems for ourselves. It moves us away from rash conclusions, mystification, and a reluctance to question received wisdom, authority, and tradition. It moves us towards intellectual discipline, the clear expression of ideas, and the acceptance of personal responsibility for our own thinking. Communities in which individuals are eager to acquire and apply the best knowledge and reason in all fields, and willing to acknowledge and correct flaws in their own thinking, are better equipped to create more profoundly effective solutions to the challenges we face in living and living together. When we teach and encourage critical thinking, we empower individual lives and invest in our collective future.
Okay, that is a great, I particularly like that. That is a great discussion of some of the key aspects of critical thinking, and we have now reached the end of another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. Great to be with you again. Happy 4th of July, happy Independence Day. I wish everyone out there the best, and we will see you all next week. Well, that went fast. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.